Are we ready? Okay, terrific. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I'm just going to share a screen with you.
I don't know if anybody is recording?
I'm recording. Okay, I wanted to this morning share with you three ideas regarding Rosh Hashanah that will start tomorrow night. And let's begin with the first idea called Let It Slide and God Will as Well. I shared this idea a few years ago. I'm not sure you remember, but I'm going to add something to it this year. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says something interesting that I believe we have to take to heart. It's a pasuk that we repeat many times during this period of time of the year. We're going to say it after the Haftorah of Shabbos Shuvah. It's not in there naturally. It's actually added in. We're going to add it after Maftir Yonah as well. And that is a pasuk that begins with the words, Mikel kamocha nose avon vover al pesha lesheirit nachalato. It's also the pasuk that begins the normative ceremony called Tashlich, if you know of that ceremony. Now that pasuk means, whatever it might mean in the pshat, but I want to see how Chazal added their interpretation on it. And this is what they say in the top of the source sheet. Kol ma'avir al midotav, ma'avirin lo al kol pesha'av. Whoever lets things slide, not things that are important and essential, not if someone stole from you 30,000 shekel, but rather, not the most important things. You're not sensitive to every single time someone said something to you. Then, ma'avirin lo al kol pesha'av. God also lets things slide. Shene emar, no se avon vo ver al pesha. Lemi no se avon, lemi sho ver al pesha. No se means to carry. So the pasuk says, who carries sin? So if you would have asked me, I would say, I carry sin. You carry sin. Jewish people have sins. Says the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, no. God carries the sin, and yet he's over al pesha. He lets it slide. He knows you sinned, and he lets it slide on one condition, that you're easygoing. If you're easygoing, then God will be easygoing as well. That's what the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah said. We've discussed it in the past. However, I wanted to add something this year. One of the most important parts of davening in the eyes of the beholder is unetane tokef. Why do I say in the eyes of the beholder, Bruce, and not in... Why do I not say one of the most important parts of davening? Let me tell you a little story. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who died in 1994, was one of the primary poskim of our generation. He died in 1994, as I said. Okay? On Erev Yom Kippur, his house was absolutely a zoo. Endless people came to him to ask if they should fast. Pregnant women, nursing women, people with heart conditions, people with diabetes. Erev Yom Kippur, so many people asked them if you need to fast, if you don't need to fast, how much are you allowed to eat, how much are you allowed to drink. That was his day. As he was getting closer to Yom Kippur, he says, you know, it's fascinating. All day people have asked me if they should fast or not fast. Not one person asked me, Rabbi, how do you do tshuva? How do you chozer b'tshuva? Yom Kippur is coming. We're Erev Yom Kippur. We're literally hours before the day begins. How do you do tshuva? No one asked that question. All they asked was, how do you fast? Do I need to fast? Yes, no, maybe. You come to Rosh Hashanah, it's very interesting that there are primary things, secondary things, and customs. And yet, in the eyes of the Jewish people, the customs are far more important, in my opinion, than the actual halachos. There's two halachos d'oraisa, three halachos d'oraisa on Rosh Hashanah. Number one is, it's a yontif. You have to fulfill all the mitzvot of the yontif, both lo taseh and aseh. Number two, we have a daily mitzvah of kriyat shema, twice a day. And number three, on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we have the biblical commandment of blowing shofar. And then you have the rabbinic commandments of davening and whatnot. Correct? Davening could be an eight sarah, could be d'oraisa, but not every word in the machzer is d'oraisa. However, in the eyes of the beholder, what is the most important part of davening?
Shema.
shuffleboard.
In the eyes of the beholder. If you go to your shul and you say you're taking out the netane tokef because you're davening outside and they're masks and it's very uncomfortable, halachically you're on very firm ground. But in the eyes of the beholder, to say who shall live and who shall die is extremely important. So based on that, I'm going to say as follows. It's not on the hierarchy of mitzvot the most important part of davening, but it is important in the eyes of the people that daven. So, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says the following. Rosh Hashanah, called by Olam Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maron, on Rosh Hashanah, it's a day of judgment for all humanity, and the Gemara wants to know what Vnei Maron means. And last week we discussed two of the three interpretations. Today we're going to discuss the third. Rish Lakish Omar, Kimalot Beit Maron. It means like steps. You ever go up steps? You go into shul. You ever go up steps? Okay, going up steps is a very interesting experience, because usually two people can't go up the steps at the same time. Namely, you have to wait till the person in front of you goes up for you to go up, unless the steps are very wide. So says the Gemara, what does it mean that all humanity comes before God, Kivnei Maron? It means that on Rosh Hashanah, one by one, going up the steps slowly, each person goes up the steps. However, a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Avrumi Farber suggested something interesting. He said, there's another Gemara that mentions Kivnei Maron. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and it doesn't talk about Rosh Hashanah. It talks about judgment, and not judgment by God, but judgment in a court. And what does this Gemara say? The Gemara says, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof, a pasuk in Parshat Shoftim, Rav Ashi Amar, Matnitin Kedashinan Keroi, Echad Ledin Vechad Lipshara. Why does it say Tzedek twice? The Torah does not waste words. One Tzedek means do justice in the sense of the letter of the law. And the other is pshara. What's pshara?
Compromise.
Compromise. Therefore, from this perspective, the Gemara in Sanhedrin is basically saying that you shall pursue justice, which means the letter of the law, and compromise. So therefore, the Gemara then says, and just in case you don't know what I mean, I'll give you an example. Ketzad. Anytime the Gemara says Ketzad, it takes you by the hand and explains what it means. Shtei Sfinot Ovrot Banahar Ufagu Ze Bazeh. Two boats are in a very, very narrow river, and they're trying to get through. So what's going to have to be, Bruce? How are they going to get through? There isn't room for two. If they all both try to go together, they'll bump into each other and they'll sink. But if one lets the other through, gives him the right of way, then they can get through. And just in case you're not in the boating industry, you're not like my son in the Navy, so we'll give you another example. On shore, two camels. They're going up to the steps, and they ultimately bump into each other. Im alu shnehen, shnehen noflin. If they both go up at the same time, they both fall. Bezeh achar zeh, but if one goes after the other, then it's okay. This Gemara is basically saying that when two people are about to go up the steps, one has to let the other go through. They can't both go through at the same time. This is a very important Gemara that I would teach every driver in the land of Israel. So, correct? Correct. So the way to get to your destination is indeed to do it in this particular way. And therefore, the Gemara says that's basically what needs to be done. Namely, that you need to have one person give the other the right of way. So this Rav Avrami, I just give his name again because he's the one that said it. Rav Avrami Farber suggested that's what it means in the Netane Tokev when we say, K'vachol Baye Olam, Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maron. It's like steps. If you are gracious and you allow people to cut you going onto the highway, not put you in danger, not steal money from you. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about in issues like they owe you 100 shekel or 50 shekel. To remember it, to remind them day in and day out, depends how much 50 shekel means to you. But I believe that a Jew should not remind his friend that you owe me 5 shekel. Same thing here. The more you let things slide, the more God will let things slide as well. Now, from this perspective, that's what we're trying to invoke on Rosh Hashanah. Because if you think about it, if you do a sin, you're supposed to be punished for it. There's no two ways about it. If you do a sin, you're supposed to be punished by it for it. Ultimately, there's no way out of that. The only way out of that is if God lets things slide. The only way God will let things slide is if you let things slide. You're going up the steps, you let someone go first. Well, that's the first idea I think we should try to internalize for this coming Rosh Hashanah. Namely, that yes, on the letter of the law, we should go first. We deserve this and that and the other thing. But the more you let things slide, the more God will as well. So that's the first idea I have for this coming Rosh Hashanah. Let's go on with the second idea. The second idea is the davening itself. In the davening of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, in the bracha, the third bracha, we add in the words, Uvechein tein pachtecha, Uvechein tein kavod, and we start with Uvechein. How would you translate the words Uvechein? Yes, Rabbi Lewis, I don't hear you. You're on mute.
Therefore.
So I thought so too. There's only one problem. Therefore usually comes after you said the first statement. What's the first statement? The first statement is, Atah Kadosh, Veshimcha Kadosh, you're holy, your name is holy, holy people will always glorify your name, and therefore, one doesn't have to do with the other. What's one have to do with the other? That's one of the biggest problems with translations. When you talk about translations, it's a huge problem.
Because.
So again, there should be a sentence beforehand explaining, like, God, you're the king of the world. Because of that, put your fear over all humanity. That's not what it says. It just says, because of that. It's like in the middle of the sentence we come in.
How about this case?
Say again?
Like in this case.
In this case. What do you mean in this case?
In this case, I'm going to mention this is the case. And if they want to make another one, they'll make another case. But meaning it's no precursor to we're saying in this case, the translation in this like in this example, there's much of therefore because of and now in this case.
Oscar says it's so too.
So too. So too. That makes more sense. So too. Which means, and God, you're holy, your name is holy, and so too, put your fear over all humanity, give honor to your nation. So too, I can hear more. But the Bible, or to be more precise, the Siddur was patterned over the Hebrew of the Bible, of the Tanakh. That's what the Abu Draham says in his famous book on davening, and therefore he goes to the trouble of trying to take every part of davening and analyze it based on the biblical Hebrew. And that's a very important part when you learn davening, because we, knowing modern Hebrew, many a times translate the words of the Siddur and of the Machzer based on our knowledge of modern Hebrew. And that's a mistake, because many times it sounds ridiculous. I'll give you an example. It says at the end of Sim Shalom, V'chol tov yeh be'enecha levarechet amcha Yisrael, and you shall be good in your eyes to bless the Jewish people, V'chol eit u'v'chol sha'a. What do those words mean? At every time and at every hour. That's modern Hebrew, but that makes no sense. If it's every time, it's also every hour. Sha'a in the Bible means turn. How do we know it means turn? Adam Arishon had two kids, Cain and Hevel. They brought Korbanot to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The pasuk says, "Vayisha Hashem yutshin ayin el kayin ve'el minchato." Excuse me, el hevel ve'el minchato. Right? God turned towards that one. Ve'el kayin ve'el minchato lo sha'a. He didn't turn towards the other sacrifice. So, therefore, just translation-wise, when you look at the Siddur HaMachzer, it's patterned on Biblical Hebrew, not on Mishnayic Hebrew, and not on modern Hebrew. And sometimes it comes out that when we translate it in our modern Hebrew minds, it's ridiculous. And you shall be good to bless the Jewish people at every time and every hour. Why not every minute? Why not every second? But that's not what it means. So, therefore, the Abu Dram suggests, if I want to translate the words uvechein that we say in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I have to go back to the Bible. Now, according to the Abu Dram, there is a famous place where we use the words uvechein. Where is it? In Megillat Esther. In Megillat Esther, it says uvechein avo el hamelech. And whatever uvechein means, therefore I shall come to the king. Lefi shehu ata, because now it's Yom Hadin. We're coming before the King of all kings, God. So we use the word uvechein, which is the word the Megillah used when Esther came before the king. So going back to the Megillah of Esther, when did Esther come before the king? When did Esther come before the king? Look at the next source. Esther said to Mordechai, everyone should fast for 3 days. And then, uvechein avo el hamelech. And then I'll come to the king. And afterwards, I'll come to the king. So the Abu Dram says it's patterned over that pasuk. 3 days of fasting, all the Jewish people, and then I'll come to the king. Correct? What? It was on Pesach. Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein suggests that this is what it means. When Esther came before the king, she didn't come alone. It wasn't Esther coming before the king. Esther was the representative of the Jewish people at that moment. But she wasn't coming before the king as Esther singular, but rather as the Shliach Tzibur, or the Shlichat Tzibur, the representative of all the Jewish people that fasted for 3 days and nominated her to come. And that ultimately is what we're saying to God. When we come and say, uvechein tein pachtecha, uvechein tein kavod, we're basically saying, God, we're not coming in our name. We're coming in the name of all the Jewish people that we're connected to and have nominated us to say these words. Who nominated Jew Bruce? Who nominated Jew Harold? Who nominated any of us? The answer is, if you are connected to the Jewish people all year, when you're davening, you're not just davening for yourself. In your minds, in your hearts, you have other people in mind. I'm not talking just about the guy who says, all right, daven for this and this 6 person. So on Rosh Hashanah, you're going to have a list in front of you to daven for this person or that person. Okay? No, that's not the situation. What I'm talking about here is something more than that. Is that even in your subconscious, if you didn't daven alone all year, or if you didn't stay in your house all year, you're connected by definition to Jewish people around the world. You're in touch with them. You ultimately have a relationship with them. So when we talk about this part of davening, that part of davening, even in your subconscious, you think about them. And allow me to give you a proof from the actual halachos of Rosh Hashanah davening. Everybody here knows that when you come to davening sometimes and you didn't know what you're doing, you can be embarrassed. And this, by the way, every one of us, I suggest, do this once in your life. And I'll tell you what I mean. Someone in this room who has never been to a Sephardic davening has to go once a year. You know why? You ever been to a Sephardic davening, Bruce? Harold, you ever been to a Sephardic davening? You daven with Mincha. I'm talking about Shachris on Shabbos. You've been there? Shachris on Shabbos. You know why it's a good experience for you and Ashkenazi? Because you finally feel what a Chozer B'tshuva feels like when he comes to shul.
You're lost.
You're totally lost. You don't know where they are. when you think you have to stand for Baruch Hu, they're all sitting. Okay? When you think you continue davening, oh, and you think the chazan's this guy, all of a sudden the chazan's that guy. Right? They take turns. All of a sudden they start chazorat hashatz, right? You say Baruch Hu v'ruch Shemo. Right? Baruch atah Hashem, Baruch Hu v'ruch Shemo. Good. Elokeinu v'elokei avoteinu. All of a sudden everyone screams out, Alehem HaShalom. And you're sitting there saying, who? Where'd this come from? Every one of us has to go through that experience a few times a year because it's anti-haughty medicine. You want to be a bar gaiva? Go to a davening you don't know, sit there for an hour, and come out of there less haughty. So, everybody knows that in any davening around the world, there's one thing in common, amongst many. The silent Amida is the silent Amida, correct? When you get to the Amida, it's silent, right? The embarrassment of a Jew that's never been to shul, or a chozer b'tshuva, or a proselyte, a convert is going to be, they come to shul, they hold the sitter upside down, of course, and they sit there, and when everyone's standing, they're sitting. When everyone's sitting, they're standing, and all of a sudden they say the davening out loud when you're supposed to be silent. So, one thing's for sure in all shuls, the silent Shmoneh Esrei, it's silent, except for one day a year. Which day? Or to be more precise, 3 days a year. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Yesh Umrim, some say, Sheber Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippur, Mutar lahashmia kolam b'tfila. On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you are allowed to... Anyone? You are allowed to what? Lahashmiya kolam b'tfila, to daven out loud a little bit in your silent Shmoneh Esrei. All of a sudden, it's not a silent Shmoneh Esrei. Afilu b'tzibur, even if you're in a minyan. So all year long, it's the silent Amida, and in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you're allowed to daven out loud. Says the Rama, v'chein noagin, and that's the minhag. However, he says, not too loud, so you don't bother people too much. How come it's not a bother on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah? How come? It's a bother this morning, it's a bother at Mincha, it's a bother at Maariv, it's a bother tomorrow morning, it's a bother at Mincha. All of a sudden, Maariv, oh, you can daven out loud. So I heard from Rav David Leibowitz something amazing. He said that on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, what you want to invoke is Uvechein, namely, I'm not here by myself, I'm here in the name of all the Jewish people. And just in case you forgot who the Jewish people are, just in case at that moment you have amnesia, you don't remember who your neighbors are, you don't remember who the people around you are, no problem. People are davening out loud. All of a sudden you see, oh, Moshe Yankel over here, he's unemployed. Oh, Chaim Moshe, he has a daughter that needs a shidduch. Oh, he has a son, Corona. Oh, he's been sick with a heart condition. When they're davening out loud, all of a sudden, your davening is connected to not just yourself, but everyone around you. And therefore, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you're saying Uvechein, you can daven out loud. Rav Soloveitchik says a very similar idea with regard to Yom Kippur. My whole life, I was told that Yom Kippur is called many different names, amongst them, Tzom Ha'asiri. What do those words mean? Tzom Ha'asiri.
Tenth fast.
The tenth fast. The day of the tenth Tishrei is a fast. Says Rav Soloveitchik in an ingenious comment that usually fast means ta'anit. Ta'anit. Tzibur. Right? Midaven ne'ila on a ta'anit tzibur. Many people mistakenly think ne'ila is a Yom Kippur davening. Ne'ila is davening on every ta'anit tzibur. We don't have Ta'aniyot Tzibur today, except for Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. And therefore, the question is, why don't we daven it on Tisha B'Av, which is a separate shir? But on Yom Kippur, it's a Ta'anit, so why is it called Tzom? So a few years ago, a machzer came out with the Perushim of Rav Soloveitchik. It's one of my favorite machzers, and this is what it says inside. The word Tzom, in another context, means braid, as in the Mishnah in Chulin, Perek Dalet Mishnah Vav. Through the term, Tzomet Hagidim, or braided. I can't pronounce this word properly. Is it sinews?
Sinews.
A braid is a collection of individual strands unified into a single entity. So let me explain what he means. Has everyone here learned the malachot of Shabbos, the 39 malachot that are forbidden on Shabbos? Many of them we don't even think about because we don't have farms. But one of them is called lash, right? Lash means to take dough and to braid it. What do you do when you braid dough? You take flour, you take water, and you make it into one. So they used to be separate, and you make it into one. That's one of the malachos of Shabbos called lash. Therefore, when you say, I braid the challah, you're basically taking separate parts and putting them together. On Yom Kippur, says Rav Soloveitchik, we celebrate the forgiveness bestowed on Knesset Yisrael, or a gavra, a single communal entity. The simcha that underlines the holiday of Yom Kippur is particularly associated with this unconditional communal forgiveness. What does that mean? Anyone? What does that mean? What Rav Soloveitchik is basically saying is Tzom Ha'asur does not just mean fast. It means braiding the Jewish people together as one. Namely, when I daven, when I ask God for forgiveness, it's not just for me. It's for everyone. And that's what God promised on Yom Kippur. He didn't promise Yehoshua that he will forgive him. He promised he's going to forgive the Jewish people wherever they might be. And therefore, the more you connect to the Jewish people, the more you have a chance to get through these days successfully. The less you connect, the less you have a chance. And I want to be very clear. I'm not talking about people that, God forbid, can't connect to the Jewish people because they have corona, they're in bidud, they're in isolation, they're in quarantine. No. I'm talking about people that all year long sort of don't connect with the Jewish community around them. There's something that's happening in the community, they feel it has nothing to do with them. The more you're connected to what happens in your community, in your town, in your city, the more this is going to be successful. Just like Esther, when she went into the king, she had the entire Jewish people fast for 3 days for her. She was coming there, if I can picture the scene, it's like all the Jewish people were pushing her forward and saying, you're our lady, you're the one, you're going to come in our behalf. Now, if you think about it, that's what a chazan should be. The worst way to say the person who leads services is a chazan is to say chazan. That's not what chazan means in the Gemara, in the Mishnah. What's the term for a chazan? Shliach Tzibor, messenger of the congregation. He's a messenger. Namely, he's the one we nominated. When he gets up there to say HaMelech, or he says Yit Gadal, he is the one that the entire congregation wants to represent them. But when he's up there, it's like he's connected with strings to everyone around him. Therefore, I personally, Machlokes, we dealt with this once, I personally like the Chazonim that stand in the middle of the shul. Because then they are connected to everyone around them far more visibly, far more tangibly. When you're up in front, sometimes you're in your own world. Therefore, a shliach tzibur is the right term. You're connected by strands to everyone around you. And therefore, your davening will be a davening that's not just going to be good for you, but good for the people around you, to inspire them, to elevate them, to make them feel that they're part of this particular experience. So the second thing I wanted to say this morning was, when we invoke the words Uvechein, we're saying we're connected to all the Jewish people. And if you're not, you got a day and a half to try to connect. See what's happening in your community. See what the needs are. And that's what you come to davening with. Your personal needs connected to those of all the Jewish people. That's why when you daven for a sick person, what do you say? You don't say, heal him. You say, heal him betoch shar cholei Yisrael, together with all the sick people of the Jewish people, wherever they might be. Correct? Therefore, when you daven before you go on a trip, you say Tfilat HaDerech. The Gemara is very clear that one Deya said you should say Shetolicheini leShalom betatzdideini leShalom, take care of me. The Gemara is quick to point out you should always Mishtatef BeHadei Tzibura, be part of the congregation, be part of the community, and therefore you should say it in plural and not in singular. So the second idea of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is connect to the community around you. The more you do, the more you have a chance to get through these days successfully. The third idea I wanted to talk about is something that this year, at least here in Israel, is going to be a challenge. According to the rule that's come out from the Ministry of Health, you can only go into a shul over Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur if you either have gone and got vaccinated, or you did a corona test and came out negative. And those are the two ways you can walk into a shul. So that's okay for people above 12 that can get vaccinated. But what about the people under 12? So between the ages of 3 and 12, we always pick on the kids. Those kids can only come into shul if they get a corona test, a PCR test. Now, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. However, I've heard, to my dismay, that people said, well, kids shouldn't come to shul anyway. They don't know how to daven well. All they do is interrupt. They walk out. They play. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's a terrible thing, in my opinion. Kids should not come to shul if they interrupt davening. That's a given. But if kids can begin to daven, believe me, their place is in shul. I don't know if Harold remembers this, but Harold, do you remember we used to daven together Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur in the Beis Medrash upstairs? Remember? Harold remembers, right? Harold doesn't remember this story, though. It was around...
I do remember that.
So, Harold, around grade 3, grade 4 in my life, I started to daven. And daven, almost the whole davening with the machzer, holding that famous Berenbaum machzer in my hand. And my father, Zechrono Levracha Chaye Olam Abba, saw I was davening on Rosh Hashanah. In between Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, went to the shul office and bought me a seat, even though the seat was empty next to him. He said, no, no, no. If you daven, you get a seat and you pay for it. That's the way it should be done. Now, that's only because the shul welcomed in kids. And there was a whole youth department saying, we want to encourage kids to feel comfortable in a shul setting. Now, I find it very, very disturbing that people said, not that you need a PCR test, that if that's what's needed, that's what's needed, period. But that they sort of said, it's just kids, they shouldn't be there anyway. If you start saying that, we have no future. No future. If you don't believe in the next generation, we have no future. I'll give you an example from Hilchos Shofar. Bruce Bloth Shofar, he finished 100 tkiot, he came home. And everyone said, Shkoyach, Shkoyach, Shkoyach. And Bruce said, thank you. Hey, you want to see something nice? And he takes his shofar and he starts blowing Yankee Doodle Dandy. Bruce, what do you say? First of all, that's haughtiness. But second of all, what's wrong with what you just did? You're not allowed on Yontif or Shabbos to blow a musical instrument. Gzeirat Chachamim, that you might fix it. So, there are deyot that maybe it doesn't apply to shofar, but in general, we say it does. So, if it applies to shofar, it applies to shofar. So, you can't blow Yankee Doodle Dandy after davening or before davening. You can only blow the 100 kios, correct? Except for one person. Once you finish blowing, you can't blow again. Unless you have to blow for someone who didn't hear. Except for one, the kids. The halacha is, kids can blow on Rosh Hashanah lehit lamed. Namely, after davening is over, they already heard shofar, they can practice. Why? Because we believe in the next generation. We have to start training the next generation. So on Rosh Hashanah to say the kids, who cares? Absolutely against the halacha that I just quoted. You, an adult, you can't practice shofar once it's over. But a kid can. And allow me to introduce this by the laning that we're going to lane on Rosh Hashanah. On the first day, we're going to talk about the banishing of Hagar and Yishmael from the house of Sarah and Avraham. And the second day, we're going to talk about the Akedah. On the first day, how does Hagar relate to her kid, to Yishmael?
She puts him down and walks away.
That's right. Batashlech et hayeled tachad achad asichim, right? No more water. Puts him down, walks away. The entire laning, you don't see the mother talk to the child at all. Finish the first day laning. Let's go to the second day laning. Does Avram and Yitzchak talk to each other? That's right. Yitzchak says, hey, Dad, it looks like you're about to bring a korban. Where's the korban? And Avram says like a wishy-washy answer of, oh, God will show us the korban. Vayilchu shnehem yachdav. There was a conversation between them. They walked together. Says the Medrash, why do we get the brachos of Birkas Kohanim? Why did God promise us all these beautiful blessings? Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha, etc. One of the reasons? Because Avram and Yitzchak walked together. I would like to suggest, if we don't believe in the next generation and invest in them, we have no future. So they're allowed to blow shofar, because we have to invest in the next generation. And we're not going to be like Hagar, who doesn't even talk to her child the whole first day laning. We're going to be like Avraham, who has a conversation and walks with Yitzchak. Has a relationship with Yitzchak. He's 100. Yitzchak is 10 times more younger, and yet they have a relationship. Literally, as we say in the Halel, Haktanim im Hagidolim. And therefore, on Erev Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to eat, which is nice. It's important, but why is it Rabbi Akiva never left the Beis Medrash except for Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur? Because he said, on these days, I have to invest in the next generation. Erev Pesach, if on the Seder night, the kids don't ask questions, it's not a kosher Seder. Erev Yom Kippur, if I don't go ahead and ensure that the kids eat and celebrate Yom Kippur, we have no future. Twice a year, I left the Beis Medrash. To invest in the next generation. Not to be at home. Not to learn with my kids. To invest in the next generation. I would like to suggest maybe that's the reason that there's a difference between two mountains in Judaism. I heard this from the chief rabbi of England, Rabbi Mervis, years ago. He said the following great idea. There's two mountains in Judaism that are very important. Har HaMoriah and Har Sinai. Which one has Kedusha today and which one doesn't?
Har
Maria. Mm-hmm. Har Abayit has Kedusha. Har HaSinai has no Kedusha whatsoever. Since Maimat Har Sinai, Bimshocha Yovel, as soon as you hear the shofar blow, Hemaya Alu Bahar, you can go up to the mountain to this day. Har HaMoriah, Har Abayit, we paskin like the Rambam. That kitchela sha'ata, the kitchela atid lavo, it has kedusha. If you want to go up to Har HaBayit, you better be very careful to know where to walk, to go to mikvah beforehand, not to wear leather shoes, etc. Said Rabbi Mervis, you know why Har HaBayit has kedusha? And Har Amoriah has kedusha and not Har Sinai? Who went up on Har Sinai? Moshe Rabbeinu. Who went with him?
No
one. Who went up Har HaMoriah? Avram. How did he go up?
Yitzchak.
With Yitzchak. Twice in the Torah, said Rabbi Mervis, twice, it says, Lo Tov, no good. When does it say Lo Tov? The first time was Adam HaRishon, whose anniversary of birth we're going to celebrate on Rosh Hashanah. Correct? Lo tov yata adam levado eselo ezer ken negdo. Lo tov to be alone. What's the second time it says lo tov in the Torah? No good. Lo tov hadavar asher ata oseh. Who said to who? Yitro said it to Moshe. In what context?
Judging
all the people how? Alone. Until Moshe delegated authority to the Sarei Alafim, Sarei Meot, Sarei Chamishim, Sarei Asarot, Lo Tov Adavar. No good. When you do it alone, Lo Tov. If you don't believe in the next generation, it's lo tov. Therefore, Rosh Hashanah, two leinings. The first leining, Hagar doesn't even talk to her child. The second leining, Aaron has a relationship with his child. And on that Hara Moriah, that has Kedusha to this day, we must ensure that the next generation is part of our focus. If not, we have no future. And it could be a terrible and detrimental word for the Jewish people. I believe fully that even if it's going to be a difficult Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we won't be able to get PCR tests on time and whatnot, we better think, how do we connect to the next generation? How do we ensure that they have a visible, tangible, enjoyable, substantial, and significant Jewish experience? If not, we have no future. And this is not just me, this is the halacha. You teach, the kids can play with shofar to train that one day they're going to be the shofar blowers. So three ideas we set today. Number one, the first idea of the morning was, let things that are not so important slide. And God will as well. Number two, you're not coming to shul alone. You're coming to shul as a shliach tzibur with many people behind you. And that's only if you connect to them all year. If you have no relationship with anyone, you're a Robinson Crusoe, it's not going to happen. And number three, don't forget the kids. Don't forget the kids. I'm sorry I have to log off now, but I wanted to wish everyone a Shana Tova, a Ktiva V'Chatima Tova. It should be a good year in which we invest in ourselves, in our families, in our kids, and ensure that we have a visible and tangible Jewish experience for all the above.